darling, don't you have a couch we could discuss this on?
I've got to tell you something. We really have to get you down to the Schlemiel Center.
I'll get down with you anytime you want, man. I want to. Oh, please. Let's get down on your couch. No worry. But you have to come. You got to bring your couch to my apartment because I don't want to go outside. I'm afraid of being outside because the other people, they want to get me because they think I should die. And I don't want to die. Yeah. Why should I die? No, I don't want to die. Do you want to die? Does anybody want to die?
Now, calm. You've got to remain calm here now.
What?
Try to take a deep, deep breath and think.
You mean in your ear you want me to...
No, more like...
In your ear, darling, I'll... Ooh, anything you want.
Listen, you still haven't answered my question. If I were to send a SWAT team down to your door...
A what?
To break down your door and grant you over to the Schlemiel Center... Could you
Are they good-looking
the
men, or what? Are you coming with them?
Only for 5 minutes.
You coming? You gonna
I
come
only
with me?
Do 5 minute sessions.
We're gonna come together?
You know, that's the topic of another show.
What?
I think we need to take the next call. WBAI, you're on the air.
Hello, Armand?
I guess that's all the time we have today. Unless,
Armand?
Is that really caller Monroe?
Armand, freedom of speech, Armand. Armand, I have important things to discuss about Clayton Riley.
Monroe?
I'm worried about Clayton. He thought that the world champion Arizona Diamondback team... that they weren't even a major league team. They were not even good enough to be in the minors. And he's broadcasting and getting more and more and more and more and more and more time on WBAI. I don't understand it. I think you ought to have him on your couch. I think we need to get help for these poor people that need help. I mean, we know you do a good program, but if you put more time into the couch, then, you know, we would have a station we could be proud of. He goes around character assassinating me, says I called in to where we live, and that one night I didn't call in. I mean, I don't call every show, but that show I didn't call in, and he said, I did. And I asked him to play the tape. And he doesn't.
Monroe. Monroe, before we end the program, I want to establish one thing. You are the most beloved phone caller in WBAI history. And we have to say that. But I really have to ask you, what does Clayton have to do with your childhood? Now, if we could pinpoint your problem, maybe we could do something about it. But
well, I like people, you know. I think people are what makes the world, that makes the radio station, makes
but,
everything.
But Monroe...
It's people. So
Monroe,
we have to have healthy...
Monroe...
People. Come on, Armand, get with the program.
Monroe, there's no way in the world that I can help Clayton with his childhood.
He likes jazz. You like jazz. What? You have things in common. He plays jazz for hours. I'm getting sick of jazz already. I love it, but I hate it. I want Phil Farrar on instead of Clayton Riley.
Now's the perfect time for me to mention my new CD of world music. If you'll send a contribution to Bunker Radio, we'll be glad to send one of these pirated discs that you'd normally have gotten if you'd go down to Tower Records yourself. But back to Monroe. Monroe, what would you like for Christmas, Monroe?
I'd like to have my old WBAI back.
On WBAI. What?
Yes, you're tuned to WBAI 99.5 FM, free speech, non-gag rule, listener-sponsored radio, and we're back.
Buenas tardes. This is Al Lewis, and I'm back at my usual slot, a little bit late. I had to cover for a gentleman that was preempted,
and I took his hour and a half, and we had a great deal of information and laughter, and I was surrounded by a lot of friends. And today's show, I have as the guest in the studio is Mr. Omawale Clay, who is from the December 12th Movement, who has been a guest of mine for a number of times, not during the past 13 months, because we were in absentia, in exile, Devil's Island. And when we get him on the phone, Father Lawrence Lucas, who's a good friend, been a Catholic priest for 43 years. And to start off the program, for those of you who are tuning in for Al Lewis Live, I would like to play some remarks made by Playtel Benjamin, a gentleman who used to have a show on here. And I've heard it. I think whatever I would want to have said about the past 13 months, he has said it very well. And I have an engineer, Liza. Whenever you're ready, we'll hear Mr. Benjamin.
Has ended. We threw the rascals out. It has been over a year since I was last privileged to speak over these airwaves. Not that I wasn't offered opportunities to do so during the Reign of Terror. Turning down those opportunities to talk to you over the last year, given the momentous events that have transpired in that time, was almost unbearable for a compulsive pedagogue like me. But as much as I long to speak to the learned listeners who regularly tune into this station, or the untutored mobs who perchance stumble across this hallowed spot in the middle of the FM dial in the greatest city in the world, I cannot bring myself to cast my lot with the churls, blackguards, and charlatans who had commandeered these airwaves. Sneaking in under the cloak of midnight like cutty purses and pirates, seeking to silence the voices of truth and light under the cloak of darkness, they cast out devoted tribunes of the people who had fearlessly spoken truth to power in behalf of the powerless. Yea, were I a Christian, I would say that they who had been cast out were crucified for doing the Lord's work. But since I am more inclined to ancient African cosmology, I sought the wisdom of shamans and sorcerers, then pitched in to help purge the evil spirits from this holy space. Hence, I raised my voice and lifted my pen to that end, scribbling polemics in cyberspace, speaking out for truth and justice in public places, and cleansing the evil vibes that hung like a veil over our beloved WBAI with the blood of a newly slain lamb. And while I cannot attest to the ultimate effects of these rituals and conjurations, it is a little matter, because the usurpers and mudslingers have been swept away, consigned to the dustbin of history, and hopefully they will never be heard from again. In their stead, you can now wake to the warm basso profundo of Bernard White, the smoky contralto of Janis Kay, the effervescent soprano of Amy Goodman, and the poignant tenor of Robert Knight, who sounds as if he personally feels the pain of the world as he tells us the news of war, famine, and assorted tragedies and disasters around the planet. The whole episode with the airjackers was like an Orwellian nightmare, scripted by Franz Kafka and Ishmael Reed, where distinguished journalists with poke awards were silenced in favor of the mindless chatter of third-string mediocrities. The debasement of language alone was sufficient to chastise the usurpacious scoundrels. Love is hate. War is peace. Evil is righteousness, with their oxymoronic screed. Not since that amiable dunce Ronald Reagan called a nuclear missile the peacekeeper have we witnessed such linguistic perversion. Nowhere was this clearer than the cries of racism and sexism emanating from people who practice these vices on a scale previously unimaginable at this station. And the malicious decision to manufacture a race problem in order to mask unbridled personal ambitions, smearing the reputations of heroic white colleagues who have stood shoulder to shoulder with the black community in our protracted struggle against institutional racism, eloquently exposed their moral bankruptcy. For racial arsonists are no more attractive in black skins than in white skins. Equally absurd and duplicitous was all the pious prattle about democracy and freedom of speech from a dictatorial station manager who came to power in a midnight coup and set up a gulag in which democratic processes and free speech were forbidden upon pain of banishment. Instead, people who had previously worked in a relaxed, collegial environment suddenly found themselves under a surveillance regime so pervasive that it called to mind Big Brother and George Orwell's prophetic anti-fascist novel, 1984, or Michel Foucault's total surveillance environment. Under the reign of this reactionary clique, privacy became a victim of the camera's all-seeing eye, and sullen-faced goons roamed the halls, intimidating all who might object to the creeping totalitarianism. With total control of the mics, these pugnacious sucker MCs sought to weave a new reality based upon lies and deception. Yet in the end, they went down to an ignominious defeat. Verily, beloveds, all this has come to pass in the fullness of time. Because, like Dr. Martin Luther King's favorite poet said, truth crushed to earth will rise again. Because the arc of the universe is wide, but it bends towards justice. This is Playfell Benjamin commenting from New York.
Yeah, well, that was Mr. Playfell Benjamin. And I played that on the previous hour and a half. And we have on the phone Father Lucas. And good afternoon, Father Lucas.
Good afternoon. Well, great to hear you back where you belong.
Thank you. And I have in the studio a friend of mine, Mr. Omawale Clay, from the December 12th Movement.
You call him a friend in public?
Yes. Yes, on the airways. Now,
remember, you're a priest.
And
hello, Omar.
Well, again, I have to say, because although we have a very, very informed listenership, for those who may be just tuning in to see if Grandpa's comeback, he will falter and misstep. I won't, believe me. Mr. Clay, would you explain to the listening audience what, because it doesn't get a great deal of publicity, what the December 12th Movement is?
We are a black human rights organization that has taken up the task of fighting for African people's self-determination and their independence and their right to human rights in the spirit of Malcolm and those brothers and sisters, young and old, who passed before us, who understood the nature of our oppression. And so we have taken that task up domestically in terms of many issues over the number of years, put many important slogans into the street that only represented the aspirations of our people at different times. We originated the slogans, "No Justice, No Peace," "Whose Streets Are Our Streets," "What's Coming War," "The Fight Against Crack," the Korean store boycott for the disrespect and assault against black women, the Days of Outrage, a host of things that only are significant and important because they represented what was going on in our communities at that time. Also in our international work, we've fought for that same principle that Malcolm talked about and so many people before that, around the question of our situation in the world being recognized for its reflection of man's inhumanity to man. And certainly the recent Durban conference, World Conference Against Racism, was a culmination of almost 12 years of work to establish that the crimes against humanity perpetrated against African people are not simply a question of something bad that happened, something that one should look back at horror with. These are kind of platitudes that don't really apply. The reality is our situation was we were victims of a gross crime against humanity, and keyword there is crime. So the December 12th Movement, which Father Lucas is a historical founder of, along with Coltrane Chimurenga, Viola Plummer, Sonny Carson, it, at that time when it began, was and continues to be a weapon for our people in terms of raising their consciousness.
Mm-hmm. Now, you've been a guest on my show quite a number of times, as Father Lucas said. And, excuse me, both of you heard the remarks of Playfell Benjamin. Father Lucas, would you like to comment on what Mr. Benjamin said?
I heard it
the first time on Bernard White's program.
The morning show, yes.
The morning show, Wake Up Call. And I almost passed out. I've never heard played sell so good, right on the money, and delivered it in such a way that even the dullest could understand. That was a magnificent, really, summation of what took place.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't spoken to Blake Tiles yet, but you know, one of the first, I got to congratulate him.
Mm.
Congratulate him. It was just terrific.
Mm. That's the reason that I played it on the first hour and a half that I was on for those listeners who had not heard it. Mr. Clay, what did you think of the remarks that he made?
Well, I agree with Father Lucas, that I thought the remarks were sharp and to the point. And, you know, sitting here at Grand Prix, I want to say to those brothers and sisters who are incarcerated all across New York State,
mm-hmm.
that the airways have been liberated again. And
that's right.
An important contribution to hearing your screams, cries, and resistance against fascistic goons and police and conspiracies are... there's another avenue for your voices to be heard once again, and I think that's extremely important to begin to tune back in, to call back in, and let the people know the inhumanity that's going on in the New York City prison system as well as in our communities.
Yeah,
and when you consider the lout who has benefited from this, one of them, but there's a whole lot of folks who benefited from September the 11th, but one of the things that I think folks have not yet opened their eyes to is that we're now in a fascistic society, hell-bent in it. We've been going that way, but September 11 accelerated.
Mm-hmm.
We have now blurred the distinction between the military and police. In fact, there is more militarization of the police and policing of the military than ever before, which we always associate with military dictatorship. I mean, the Bill of Rights has been thrown out the window. The Constitution has been ripped up. And these clowns are all for the purpose of money based primarily on oil and natural gas.
My friend Hampton is here. You would like to say a few words, Hampton?
Yeah, I'd like to greet Father Lucas.
Hey, Ham.
How are you, mighty one?
Fine. Good to hear you.
Same here. I see you too. Infrequently, rather, and I'd like to see more of you. But, Father Lucas, let's examine this here. The ones that go out of the military into the police departments all over the world, they've already been trained to kill. So it's nothing out of the norm for them with that background training after their induction, whether they were volunteering or anything else, into the military to get a military mind, and the word is still the same.
Except it's more obvious now. They're right out front. They're not even trying to hide it.
Well, they don't need to hide it anymore.
Right.
They have the, I call it, audacity. And to me, it's bad, you know. B-A-D. Belligerent, antagonistic, and repressive. B-A-D. Now, you find me a police department anywhere in the world that doesn't express that at the behest of their masters, and I will tell you that is heaven. It's got to be that way, that's all. And power has never respected anything but power, because it knows in time it's going to be replaced by another power, hoping that they survive in a certain part to come back. That's why you have the Democrats and the Republicans in the same bed. One sleeps on the floor this term, and the next one gets out of the bed the next term. But they're all in the same bedroom.
The same bedroom, sure. Mm-hmm.
And you know the way it goes. Mm-hmm. Politicians and prostitutes and some priests and some popes and some politicians are all in the same bucket. And believe you, for my 74 years of seeing has shown, in that bucket, sometimes those pimps treat their ladies on the street a little bit better than some of those politicians or preachers treat those that elect them.
Yeah,
look at it real close.
Yeah, don't forget the phony rabbis and imams, too, allegedly.
Put them all in there.
But one of the things that I thought was so blatant, and let me talk as a Catholic priest, to see from the Pope down a total disregard of our theology and scriptural understanding, and the kowtowing to the economics and politics of the time. For example, this whole fiasco right now in Afghanistan, it's in violation of, we have 9 principles which we use to say whether we can at least try to morally justify a war.
Mm-hmm.
8 of those principles is violated right now. Mm-hmm. And you didn't hear, I can't hear a word from the Vatican. Then you look here, our religious leaders, from the stupidity to the sublime, but I mean, could you imagine if Dave Dinkins, whether Catholic or not, was openly running around with a gal, not his wife, would be sitting in a front seat of St. Patrick's Cathedral anytime he goes in. And then again, I haven't heard anything concerning, because, you see, some of the other folks, they sell their souls for a dollar. What is frightening to me about Catholic leadership is that the mentality is the same. So they don't have to sell anything. I mean, when you look at a clown who's being projected as a hero around the country, who could find $800 million, $400 million of which, to give to someone who could afford to pay 2 employees $35 million a year. If you look at Derek Jeter, for example, and Giambi's salaries, it comes down to $35 million a year. That's only 2 employees. And he could afford to do that, and I need to take tax dollars away from the homeless, away from those that are hungry, away from those with poor health care, to build them a stadium so they could make more money. What we find has been happening over the last 70 years, an acceleration in public officials' major job is transferring public money into private hands, and then they get the rewards after. I think a former mayor, Koch, began the thing, you know, where you get the results of your dirty deal after you leave office so somebody can't accuse you. And now here you got this little Hitler will open up, quote, a consulting firm in order to help small businesses, which he did everything to destroy as mayor. Could you imagine the clients he's going to get now that it's payback time?
Yeah, I think it's important, though, just to refocus a bit, that the point that you were making before, Father Lucas, is that things have accelerated, and I think it's very important to make note of that, because things are not simply the same things. I think the tragedy at the World Trade Center, as they say in business management, some people look at events as tragedies, other people look at them as opportunities. And I think the World Trade Center disaster has presented a tremendous opportunity to put into place in this country many things that were on the shelf previously.
Exactly.
If we remember coming into this election, Ashcroft still had his white sheet still hanging on his back. Bush was not a legitimate president. The Supreme Court of the United States had been accused of preferential treatment, which you see now in terms of one of the little petty things of that is hiring of Scalia's son. A lot of these things had raised tremendous credibility questions. Certainly, we look at the question going into this election. I mean, one side or the other, the Ralph Nader impact began to give people a different view of the political landscape. This tragedy at the World Trade Center has now presented tremendous opportunity for the police state itself to accelerate its ability to pass laws in terms of the homeland security on the domestic front, but most importantly, internationally. It has been an ability for them to try to hide the nature of the tremendous world economic crisis that we're in right now, which expresses itself in one sharp expression in Argentina. And this crisis was on its way prior to September 11th, but September 11th has been a cover for it to make people think that it is not a crisis of capitalism that we're looking at, but it is in fact the whims and the practices of one man over one terror network that actually they were very familiar with in the first place.
They created it.
Absolutely.
Father Lucas. Excuse me, Omawale, but you know, I'm sorry to step in this way. But since you and Father Lucas are both younger than me, you heard your Eisenhower say, beware of the military-industrial complex. Well, why didn't he put in the politicians besides that? Why didn't he put in the police state? He said a part of it, but the surface of the military-industrial complex goes all the way down to your post office employee. My mail gets opened, and the people that are in the police of the post office department let me know this. My mail has been censored since 52. So it is nothing new that you have the military-industrial complex moving into this next sphere, which is the economic and the legalistic way of expressing itself.
No, the issue is not whether it's new. The issue is not whether it's new.
Evolving.
Yeah, well, that's the point. The issue is not whether it's new. The issue is that it has, in fact, intensified, moved to another level, but most importantly, it has become a cover for a very deep and widening world economic crisis.
Yes.
And then it finds itself in its political expression in repression, which trickles its way all the way down to the studio that we're sitting in. Because you cannot separate the attack on WBAI and the question of censorship and the crushing of dissent in this country. And particularly of note, I think, our role, Father Lucas, in terms of that, because remember the last time we were on Grandpa Al's show, one of the issues we were trying to deal with was the question of class collaboration and class struggle inside the African community, which has its domestic expression in terms of people like Condoleezza Rice and the social props that they represent, big and small. And then internationally, you see that same expression in countries that are struggling for national liberation or to throw off the yokes of neocolonialism in terms of opposition forces that perpetuate themselves or perpetrate themselves as being for the people when really they're working hand in hand with imperialism for the oppression of our people.
And the December coup brought this out so clearly that not even an idiot could have missed it.
Well, you know, sometimes I think one of the important things is, you know, over this past year, I was going to say this to Grandpa Al, you know, over this past year, there's been a lot of venom spread on the air. And a lot of new listeners, people who hadn't even listened to BAI before, came into the BAI, knowledge of BAI through listening to a lot of this venom. And a lot of it was perpetrated as black and white issues. And a lot of the history of BAI, the understandings of what was going on, was not laid out. So I think it is important to say to some of the past listeners that, as they say, you have to pay attention, close attention to detail, because there has been a history of the struggle here at BAI.
Yes.
The struggle, and it doesn't mean that that struggle was without contradictions. Issues of racism, the issue of how to involve more of the community in the station, issues of simple questions of black and white, all these things were happening and stuff. But I think what blew the lid off the stuff is these were happening internal to BAI. And so these struggles were going on, maybe not always principally, but they were at least going on inside a family. But what happened in the December coup was a real reflection of the totality of what was going on nationally and internationally to say dissent must be crushed. And very interestingly, people like Utrice, you know, and I want the listeners to understand, who is an elitist, who is a petty bourgeois elitist, who really has disdain for the masses of our people, and always has in terms of that. Someone like Utrice, or someone as tragically as it appeared on the board, who ends up being the most reactionary ones on the board, are three black people. And it's not accidental that Marion Barry and I think it was Bertram Lee and the other guy. It's not an accident, because it only was created that way to exacerbate this question and cloud it with a question that is a deep one in this country around racism, and to cloud that question by these social props of fascism trying to divert people's mind for real questions in our community about self-determination and these issues, and make it seem like it was simply one against black and white. But I think people should pay very close attention to the fact that with all the criticisms that they made of Amy Goodman in terms of that, one, she's always had a very solid, clear, analytical show that, to me, reflected the things that Samori always fought for in terms of in our community, which was critical thinking and critical analysis. So one's personal feelings about Amy Goodman were irrelevant. The real question was to judge her on the content and practice of what her show was. And I think
right.
the struggle around BAI gave an opportunity to also see her as a principled woman who, under the midst of many, many contradictions here at BAI, still struggled to simply say, in the midst of everything, that here she is where the banned and the fired cannot be, and never lost solidarity with that. And I think that spirit, and the spirit of all the listeners who have participated and fought that battle to bring us to where we are now, it's an important victory. And it's certainly, you know, Father Lucas, a real step against the Homeland Security Act, a real step in fight against the ability of people to crush dissent.
Yeah. You know, but just the side...
And I know that was long.
No, that's okay. No, we got an hour and a half. I want it to be long. I didn't bring in the magazine. My wife and I, as we do every year, we go to Havana, Cuba. And we go for the Latin American Film Festival. And we also go to the famous film school, Escuela de Cinema de Televisión, which was founded by Fidel Castro and García Gabriel Márquez, a famous Colombian writer who won the Nobel Prize for Literature. And funny thing, we stay at the Havana Libre. Now, I'm sure a lot of our listeners, and I'm sure Omawali and Father Lucas, you've been to a hotel, and there you have the magazine that's on the coffee table, whether it's called Where or Here, you know, plugging what's happening in that town. I'm going to bring it in, and I'm going to show it to everybody. Here is this magazine, and it's called MAS, M-A-S. I took it out of the hotel. And there it tells you about all the different parts of Cuba that you can visit. And dead center, I challenge any listener to find a magazine in any hotel in the United States, Canada, England, any country other than Cuba, is an article about the history of slavery. Right in this giveaway magazine. I have to bring it in and show it to you, Omawali. How important it is for the Cubans among, see the sites here in Camagüey and Varadero Beach, you know, in Santiago de Cuba. Here is a, with illustrations and photos, an article on the history of slavery and what it does. And it struck me, and I discussed it with my wife, We go, I don't know, dozens of hotels in the United States, and you get the usual, you know, buy this, go to this, go to this.
Right.
And here is this, and to me, it's just the way, you know, I don't want to be in a like a propagandist proselytizing, but I've been there for so many years, and I was there when Meyer Lansky was there. And I was there when he put his money in and he opened up the Riviera Hotel and he had this would-be actor, wanted to be a gangster, George Raft, greeting people at the door. And I go back, 70 years going to Cuba. And the changes that have happened and the funny little article that I read in the paper I showed you this morning. It was at Our Times, you know, the black... There's a little article... And it describes the UN testing of Cuban children as in all children, third and fourth grade, and how well they did, which is what Castro, throughout whatever you want to think about him, and you know, what you do is you distribute the tabloid versions of what you read. And it doesn't matter if it's in the New York Times, it's still tabloid mentality that he's an ogre and a villain and this. And his whole emphasis since the day he got there has been on health care and on education. Health care and education.
It was an interesting article because it said that the UN could not believe that the scores were correct.
Yeah, so they went down
they
again.
They were too good.
You know, they thought
they
that Cuba was cheating. You know, well, of course. And it's in the current issue of Our Times, which Hampton gave me. And I read it last night.
It wasn't too long ago, too, Grandpa Al, that it was noted that in terms of one of the very few developing countries Cuba was one of the only countries to have a real growth rate of almost 4% in a world economic crisis without a single loan from the International Monetary Fund or the World Bank. So I think over history, Cuba is a concrete example of how the quality of life of people can be raised depending on what social system and what political ideology and cultural revolution takes place in that country. These things are not beyond human reach, although it seems sometimes they are. It is a question of the people being organized and being self-determining, you know, which is why, you know, it's very important when we go back to this question, you know, Father Lucas, around this question of the social props in our community, that one of the very burning issues for us right now, and, you know, I was talking to Father Lucas, a young man who came by a Sister's Place coffee shop. He had just come out of the prison. He had done 21 years for a crime he did not commit, a murder charge. And with all the sloppy police work and everything, the bottom line was it was all intentional. But this young man spent 21 years in jail for a crime he didn't even know about, not only didn't commit, didn't even know about, didn't even relate to. And we sat there and listened, and he actually got out because one of his friends he grew up with never gave up in struggling to make sure that his case gets heard. But he was talking about the thousands of brothers and sisters in the prison system who are there because of the crimes against our humanity. And see, our people have to stop looking at this as just these are horrible acts. They're not. They're crimes. Internationally, the world has recognized these things as crimes, and there's a whole litany of them. As we sit here getting ready to celebrate, it's not the official day, but the holiday, but Martin Luther King, who was assassinated by this government. These assassinations of our leaders are not just tragedies, they're crimes. And I think African people in particular in this country and throughout the diaspora and on the continent have said that there must be compensation and reparations for these crimes. And this reparations movement, and I just wanted to comment on it, is sweeping the country. We anticipate hundreds of thousands of people in Washington, D.C. this August 17th, Father Lucas, which is the 115th anniversary of the birth of Marcus Garvey, to deal with this question of it is impossible for our community to deal with these crimes against our people that continue today, like this young brother, 21 years in jail, get reflected in the travesty of black people struggling in a principled way with white folks to build a radio station with local, national, and international impact. You know, I was so pissed to hear somebody talk about, well, BAI was over at the World Conference Against Racism. The first comments around the World Conference Against Racism came on Amy Goodman's show. Because the black person who was assigned to cover it was still in Africa and didn't report on the World Conference till November when he decided to come back. So, I mean, this playing of stuff only perpetuates and halts our ability to make legitimate demands. And this reparations question is a very important one because it's the only one that can begin to talk about creating situations where, Grandpa Al, as you say, in Cuba, where people can demonstrate to the world without a whole lot of resources that when the people are conscious and they're organized and they're very clear, from children to elders, that they can actually transform their reality. They don't have to be an appendage of the United States and Coca-Cola and Pepsi-Cola. You know, Father Lucas, you know, when we talk about criminal enterprises, I want people to see the World Trade Center goes down, and these criminals look at how it's an opportunity. From contractors down at the World Trade Center right now who are stealing money to Enron, which has made money off of this crisis, to this crisis in terms of their legitimacy, this is a criminal enterprise. You know, the Bush family, people remember the Bush family. It was a Bush brother of the president who blew the whole savings and loan. Many, many people.
Silverado Bank in Colorado. Yeah.
The Bushes, I think Jesse Jackson said once, probably something to his benefit, was that tell people to stay out of the Bushes. And the Bush family has had a history of stealing and criminal activity, and there's a whole gang in it.
A long relationship with the Bin Laden family to begin with.
Well, George W. Was a partner with Bin Laden's brother.
Right.
In Carlisle.
You know, I got to run in a minute, but, you know, three things, Obawali, that you pointed at. That this is criminal activity, and that's one of the reasons the United States is hell-bent against a world criminal court. Because if they ever had that, every living president today would have to be brought, and not to say anything about Kissinger and Baker and the rest of them. And so they're putting it in the criminal arena where it belongs, or should enable people to get away from this flag-waving nonsense that they've been brainwashed into, to look at what this country has really been all about, and particularly now where the question of oil and natural gas is directly behind. I'm suspicious enough, to tell you the truth, that of my government, that I wouldn't be surprised if the secret government, with the conniving of the public government, had everything to do to orchestrate what took place on September 11th, or without the help of Bin Laden.
Absolutely. Let me say this. There is enough evidence, for instance, to undermine whatever Arafat was trying to do. The Israelis and the United States created Hamas. Now listen to me. There is evidence. He is not the good guy. We are the good guys. To take away whatever positions he stood on, Arafat. And this has happened throughout history. Throughout history. We're going to take a break now. We're going to continue this discussion.
I have to say so long to you good folks. I got to get to another institution.
Talk to you, Father Lucas.
Thank you. Thank you.
So glad to hear your voice, Father Lucas.
Aaron, keep up the struggle with all of these.
We will. Thank you.
We hope to see you tomorrow, Father Lucas.
Right.
Yes. Yes, so will I.
You know, with the event at the Restoration Center.
Right.
I'll be there at 3 with you.
Okay.
Very good. We'll play a little music, Liza, and we'll talk a little, and we'll go to the phones, see if anybody's listening. Thank you. That was another side of Curtis Owsley, better known as King Curtis, one of my many favorite, thank you, tenor sax players, one of the Texas Honkers, Arnett Cobb, Illinois Jaquette, and I'm still here, Omar Wally Clay is here, and I don't know, are the listeners out there?
Oh,
we'll find
lots
out.
Lots of listeners out there every time they
209-2900. Hello? Anybody there? Good afternoon. Hello?
Hello. Yes, hello.
Good afternoon.
I had a couple things I want. Of course, it's a joyous time. I'm so pleased. I had a couple things I wanted to say.
Go right ahead.
One thing was I have some very sad news, which is that Patricia Dix, who was a reporter at WBAI in the 80s, passed away on December 5th.
She did the news, didn't she?
That's right.
Yes, yes, yes.
And I wanted to announce that. Of course, I've been trying to get through since it happened and hadn't been able to get through to anybody. And we're having a memorial service for her at KGB's the first Tuesday in February.
Would you give... My wife is writing it down. So that the 1st February, I will announce it again, and I'll pass it along to Bernard, Ms. Dix. And where is it?
KGB's.
Do you have a time yet?
At 8.
And yeah. And give me the address so we can announce it.
It's on 4th between 2nd and Bowery. I'm sorry, I don't know the exact address.
You don't mean CBGB?
No, I mean KGB's.
Okay, Okay, very good.
The other thing I wanted to say, and this is... you know, already, you know, you guys have barely gotten back, and already you're going to get a little criticism. When you announced the names of the people that helped, you said first and last names for the men and only first names for the women. And I just wanted to point that out. And I
That's a good point. It wasn't I.
And
it was Randy Credico, and it was also a woman. Liza.
And I also wanted to say that, you know, now is such a good time, like you said, to correct the past. And WBAI has not included a lot of women's issues and women's programs. And I hope that now...
really?
Now is a good time.
I don't know about all... See, but it's very hard to scientifically measure a lot. I don't know what you mean by a lot.
Well, I guess, actually, I've twice... set in program proposals to do a program on single mothers. Half the children in New York City are raised by single mothers.
Very good point.
85% live under poverty level.
Right.
They have a hard time getting information about all the constant changes.
Absolutely, I agree.
And it's
a
very important time now.
Absolutely,
too.
I agree. There are, as far as I know, quite a number, I don't know what a lot means, there are quite a number of women volunteer producers, like I and my wife are volunteer producers here.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
And it's an excellent point
that
you make.
There's 12,000 new teen moms in New York City every year and only 700 slots in the high school.
Yeah.
Teen moms are coerced to leave high school here in New York City.
No, that's a very
it's a very serious, serious problem
in
our midst.
Yes, yes.
Okay.
Yes. No, no, I appreciate that. But as far as women, I have to tell you this. When Samori Marksman asked me to do a show here, the first show I did... My wife is here. She will tell you.
Got the tape.
The first show I did was about all the women in my life who molded and influenced me. And I got a woman who called and said, I'm amazed that I would hear this from a man on WBAI. That was the first show that I did. The first.
Well,
I am a 91-year-old mama's boy, and I'm proud of it. My mother was the greatest influence in my life. My father died when we were very young.
Well, I just want to...
Your point is well taken.
It's great to have you back, and it's a joyous time, and I'm
thank
so
you.
Happy.
No, but I agree with you about second names, because let me tell you something. When I was active in the Pacifica Station on the West Coast, and there was a black programmer, we became very good friends, they've since gotten rid of him, Frank Greenwood, and he would play music. And I would criticize him. I said, look, when I toured the South and listened to radio stations, and when I worked medicine shows, I had my own medicine show, traveled throughout the South, they would play black artists and never give them credit by name. And he said, oh, you're right. And this was an activist, a black person, Frank Greenwood. And you're right. We have to give credit to those people. And fully so. We have to. I fully agree with you, and I thank you for the call.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
I'm glad you're back.
Thank you. Hello, is there somebody else there? Good afternoon.
Oh, hello.
Hi.
Hello, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Yourself?
I'm very well, and I'm very happy, you know, to hear you on
thank
the
you.
Air.
Thank you.
I missed not only you, but I missed you, and I missed all the others.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things that I was thinking about in reference to the station...
Go ahead.
...is that all of us have been given one of the greatest opportunities we could ever have of learning to look within and seeing what our part was in that Christmas coup that occurred.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not just that she came in and did that by herself. She had a sense that there would be a certain number of people who would go along with the idea. And this is something that many of us do. We look the other way. We ignore because we want to be able to stay. We want to be able to be allowed to do whatever we're doing, either whether we're getting paid for it or not. And we need to understand that what happened at WBAI is constantly happening every day.
Mm.
It's happening right now in Afghanistan,
mm.
where this horrible bombing is going on, without considering the fact that it's not about Osama bin Laden.
Mm.
Right now, Afghanistan basically is being... The Afghanistanis are being displaced in order to make room for the pipelines
mm-hmm.
that are coming through
mm-hmm.
and in order to be able to have one more spot along the borders of China and the former USSR. But going back to WBAI, I think that we need to be able to recognize
mm-hmm.
the part that we play every time something like what happened at WBI happens.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it gives us an opportunity to, you know, to stop selling out.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. At some point, I will bring in a number of times at public meetings, excuse me, and once the past 3 years, there was a book, I read a great deal, and there was a book that a gentleman named Milton Mayer wrote, the title of which was The Germans. They thought they were free.
Mm-hmm.
And he describes the experience of someone who survived all of this. And it's exactly how gradually they went along in order to get along.
Yes, in order to survive.
Yes.
Without understanding.
Yes. I'm going to bring it in and read it from the book. The Germans, they thought they were free. Tomorrow.
You know, Grandpa, I think...
Hello?